time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does. Thank you, Chad Erickson, and great to have you all with us on this Thursday edition of the program. A lot to do over the next 60 minutes. We'll be joined by our friend Jason Cole about 10 minutes from now, NFL columnist. NFL schedule release on Wednesday. We'll talk about it. We'll also talk about Caitlin Clark's TV numbers for her debut game in the WNBA the other night. A staggering number, especially when you compare it to other big sporting event sort of numbers. We'll get to that coming up as well. Something to consider, odds and ends, all of that good stuff. But we started out in the National Basketball Association with a Celtics team that did what it had to do. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't great. I don't think anybody comes away. You know, as Kurt Heelan and I talked about the other day on the show, I don't know if anybody comes away from this series watching the Celtics thinking that they look like world beaters, that they're inevitable, but they are on to the Eastern Conference Finals, where they'll either face the Pacers or the Knicks. Sam Yarnell hangs out with us on the show each and every day. And that's, I guess that's my overall takeaways. Okay, yeah, they won. Great. But they do not feel inevitable to me, even as a team to go to the NBA Finals, because they played a Cavaliers team that is essentially the Knicks light. Play very similar, very hard-nosed defensive team. Plays 48 minutes, will play you tough, but they don't have the talent that the Knicks have, and I don't think they have the coaching the Knicks have, quite frankly. And they were basically, able to win in five games, but it felt a lot like it was a lot closer than it should be. So how do you view the Celtics, even though they are a team going to the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, it's... I mean, we got to call a spade a spade. There was no Jared Allen in this game. There was no Donovan Mitchell in this game. And there was no Caris LeVert in this game. Like even if we were to call the Cavaliers the Knicks light version, they were like the free version of the light version. You know that when you used to get the free version of something on the App Store?
Yeah, the watermark in the corner.
The Cavaliers team. That's what that beating that team was last night. I'm worried about the Celtics. Without Porzingis, I really don't think that this is a team that is going to contend the way the numbers indicate they should for the NBA Finals.
I'll tell you right now, Sam, I'll say this right now. I don't think they beat Denver if it gets down to it.
Without Porzingis,
done in six. I think it's a six-game series.
Well, if Porzingis comes back, I think it's probably a six-game series the other way is the problem.
Really? You think they beat Denver if Porzingis comes back?
Yes.
I don't think so. I think Denver's woken up. I think we're getting the real nuggets now.
I think Al Horford woke up last night. I mean, we could start to talk about that too.
Yeah, but he could just as easily go back to sleep. Let's be honest about it.
So could the Nuggets. I mean, we saw them do that all regular season long, where they'd come out and dominate a really good team and then play a terrible half against a really bad team. At the end of the day, this Porzingis thing is really going to, for me, hinge the Celtics season or their postseason. I'm worried about them without him. I'm less worried about them with him. But again, I just can't get behind all these numbers that we're seeing everywhere on these Boston Celtics, Jason.
Boston -150 to win the NBA championship. You laying it?
No, I'd bet the no. I'd take the field.
Denver +250.
To win the whole thing, even this far out, if we're talking to win the whole thing, give me like OKC.
I can tell you right now, I'm doing this. I am absolutely doing this. And I know you're gonna give me crap when I say this. The Knicks are +2700 right now to
Stop
win an
it.
NBA championship.
Oh my God.
I am absolutely laying that.
That is one team that I would say that the Boston Celtics will walk all over Porzingis or not. If they end up playing the Knicks and they don't have Porzingis.
Without Porzingis, without Porzingis, and if the Knicks have Ananobi back, I think the Knicks can win that series.
No chance. No chance.
Oh, definitely a chance. I think you're crazy to bet against the Knicks.
Nope. Jason Tatum owns New York.
Team of destiny. Boom. I like that. I like the way that looks. Boom.
I would say, so that's an interesting point that you make, because I would say that this year Boston is more of a team of destiny than New York is. This is a team that's been seemingly destined for the NBA championship for what, the last 5 years, 6 years?
Yeah, but it's been a group that's underachieved for so long. Why now are they going to reach that destination that they haven't been able to reach?
Like, it's very clearly the end. They're going to have to move off of the Jaylen Brown contract. They're going to have to pay Jason Tatum. They know that their coach is gone if they don't win the ring this year. This is the time for the Boston Celtics.
I will rarely encourage people to go and take their hard-earned money and put it on something. If you want to go sprinkle a little sprinkle on something right now, the Knicks at 2,700, do it. The Mavericks, by the way, at plus 850, they take a 3-2 series lead on the Thunder with a win last night in Oklahoma City. I picked the Mavericks before the series started. Nothing has dissuaded me from that. I think the Mavericks are going to be taking on the Nuggets, and I think that is going to be a thoroughly entertaining Western Conference final.
I'm sticking with the Thunder here. Nah. I would even bet them to come back in this. I would bet them on the series price. I would sprinkle, like Jason's telling you to sprinkle on the Knicks to win the championship. I'd sprinkle on the Thunder. I think that this team has shown us that, like, the rookie part of everything that we talked about all season doesn't really matter, especially last series when they beat a team full of playoff experienced seasoned veterans in six games and quite frankly dominated them. I trust this Oklahoma City team. I think that they'll come back, and I'm not going to bet on Luka, who his own team is saying has been suffering from a strained Achilles for 4 months. And if this were the regular season, he would have been down for at least 2 weeks. I can't bet on that team to win a series when your star player and the guy that whole team revolves around is one bad ankle twist away from missing the rest of these playoffs. Give me the Thunder and sprinkle on them to win the title.
I sometimes wonder if that's gamesmanship, if that stuff is overstated just to kind of draw people in. I'm not 100% convinced on the idea of how injured he is, because are you going to risk the future of your franchise, where we've seen so many teams pull guys back because of calf strains, things like that? I question whether or not he is as hurt as they're saying. Banged up, yes. Hurt, no. We'll come back. Jason Cole will join us. We'll talk NFL schedule releases and a whole bunch more.
Over 13 million Americans were affected by identity theft in 2022, and the threats go way beyond just credit card fraud. Today's identity thieves can use your information in ways that are easy to miss by just monitoring accounts and credit, like opening loans, transferring home titles, even committing crimes.
Someone got my Social Security number, made a driver's license, and was used for criminal activity.
You can do so much with a Social Security number that I didn't know could happen. They drained my bank account. It was terrifying.
You're even more vulnerable than you realize. Your information is exposed through online shopping, banking, even corporate data breaches. No wonder there's a new victim of identity theft every 3 seconds. Only LifeLock alerts you to the widest volume of threats all in one place, like someone trying to use your Social Security number, open a new loan in your name, or even commit a crime in your name.
There was a big yes button, and there was a big no button. I clicked, that's not me, and LifeLock took it from there.
If you become a victim of identity theft, a dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will be assigned to your case and work to fix the issue on your behalf.
If something happens, you have somebody fighting for you.
All LifeLock members are backed by the LifeLock $1 Million Protection Package, including reimbursement for stolen funds, personal expenses, and coverage for lawyers and experts up to $1 million. It can be dangerously easy to steal your identity. With LifeLock, it's easy to help protect yourself.
I will be with LifeLock forever.
Join the millions of people already protected by LifeLock. And for a limited time, save 25% on your first year with promo code 25TV. All plans include a 60-day money-back guarantee. Call 800-710-7531 or visit LifeLock.com/25TV to save 25% on your first year of identity theft protection. Enroll now.
Attention families with a loved one in a nursing home. If your loved one has suffered from bed sores, falls, broken bones, dehydration, or even death, you may be entitled to a substantial settlement. If you have a loved one who is injured in a nursing home, we will find out what happened. State violations are found against nursing homes every day. You have a limited time to file your claim, so don't wait. Call 800-398-5999 and speak with one of our attorneys. The call is confidential and free.
All right, we keep things moving on this Thursday edition of the show. Let's focus on the NFL. Schedule release coming out on Wednesday. All while I was busy eating at some Brazilian steakhouse, which made it fun sitting there. Yeah, I know. Jason Cole joins us on the show. Longtime NFL writer and Hall of Fame selector. I had prior plans. I planned poorly. It was Brazilian. It was all you can eat Brazilian steakhouse. What are you going to do?
It's shocking you're not dealing with meat sweats right now.
I'm having the meat sweats.
I'm telling you that Brazilian steakhouse will do that too.
Yeah, yes. That's why it's something you can only do once in a while. You cannot indulge in it very often because it's just so rich. So I got to tell you, looking at the schedule, one of the things I wanted to look at first was how did it obviously line up for Kansas City as they go on this quest to try and do the unthinkable and three-peat in this NFL, this league where we talk about parity and how difficult it is to win each and every year. From a scheduling standpoint, how do you think it matches up as far as helping to sort of pave that road to the postseason?
Well, I'm trying to recall, I look at the entirety of the schedule and I didn't look at everybody's team. So give me that quick rundown on Kansas City. Remind me again.
Matter of fact, I was just talking about it with Sam when we were planning out the show. Chiefs schedule looks like, first 3 weeks, two of their first 3 weeks. And look, you can't judge what a team's going to look like through the first. You want to be peaking at the end of the season, which goes without saying. But they open at home, obviously, with the Ravens. Then they're at home for the Bengals. And then they get the Falcons their first 3 weeks. I mean, just look at the quarterbacks they face over the first 4 weeks of the season. Frankly, the first 5 weeks of the season with Carr and the Saints in week five. But they get Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, granted coming off an injury, Kirk Cousins, and Justin Herbert in the first 5 weeks. Oh, wait, and then week six, you get Brock Purdy and the Niners in San Francisco. I mean, it's pretty wild to look at what they face over the first 6 weeks.
All right, so here's the tendency, and now that you refresh me on that, and that I think about the quarterbacks, because I really hadn't thought about the quarterbacks right off. Certainly not with Atlanta, just because I'm sort of in a flummoxed by what Atlanta's doing at quarterback. But when you look at that from that perspective, the troubling part of the Chiefs is they know they can win, and they have this feeling that, okay, we can turn it on when we need to turn it on, right? And because of that, they have often gotten off to slow starts and not been exact in games. And last year was a great example. You open the Detroit game. You have other mistakes where guys are dropping balls where they're not concentrating. Those guys are gone, but it still existed. It's sort of a team approach. And I worry, do you get yourself into too much of a hole by not being more demanding of yourself in the first 6 weeks? I worry about that with them. That said, I got the best quarterback in the league. And they got the best coach in the league right now. And they have a tight end who's arguably the best tight end and next best weapon in the league. So when you combine all of that, there's a lot of room for error. They obviously showed that last year.
Can you argue, though, that it just devil's advocate here, that it can almost work the other way, that you have that robust of a schedule in the early going that it could intensify or make you more hyper-focused on the need for a fast start?
Not with a team that's already won two Super Bowls. That's already established that we can turn it on and off at any time. That just doesn't happen. Like, they're just, they are too conditioned to, oh no, we won a Super Bowl. We won two Super Bowls in a row. We won three overall. Like, we'll do it when it counts, and it doesn't really matter. You're never going to change that mentality. And the question is going to be, are they in and of themselves going to find a way to do it? The other part about this is Andy Reid is great as a head coach because he stays even keel in every moment, right? It doesn't matter what happens. Andy Reid's fault as a coach is he stays even keel at every moment and doesn't know really necessarily how to hype his team up at certain moments. So what's great about him is also sometimes a fault for Andy Reid. And I'm not sure that he's going to be able to push the right buttons and make this and do what you're talking about. I think he's going to lean on the players to do it. And that could be problematic in this start. These are, you know, and we're talking about very minute problems in the grand scale.
What do you make of the Eagles? I mean, 30th easiest. I mean, they've got one of the easiest schedules. Does it almost set up the narrative of them having to attain a certain level of success this year in order for, you know, that coach to keep his job, for that sort of group to remain in place?
Yeah, it sets up the narrative. I always look at that kind of stuff in the NFL and go, really? Like, the difference between the 30th schedule and the second hardest schedule, the 30th easiest one, the second hardest, is so minute. This is not like college football, right, where you can set up a series of pansies. But for the Eagles, given that narrative, yes, there's going to be an incredible amount of pressure on the coaching staff. There is going to be an incredible expectation from the GM and the owner, neither of which played football, so they believe in analytics, and they believe in the stuff that you're talking about, where if you're the 30th best or you have the 30th easiest schedule, you should roll through it. So there's going to be an incredible amount of pressure on them. And yes, they've shown that they're willing to make changes and make them quickly in pursuit of a title. So yeah, I would not rest easy if I was in with the Eagles.
I only got about 30 seconds left in this segment. You're going to get Dallas, the Jets, and San Francisco six times in primetime. You like it?
Well, not the Jets. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, okay. I like watching Aaron Rodgers play football. I don't like him on Tucker Carlson, but I like him playing football. And, you know, if he's healthy, it's fine. That works, but I don't know why they, like, the seeing gangrene just doesn't really work for me. The 49ers are exciting. That's fine. I will say this. The Jets, their first 5 weeks are sneakily really tough because they start on the West Coast and they end up in England. And with short weeks, that's twice.
True. That's very true.
That's a rough first 5 weeks.
We're hanging out with Jason Cole talking the NFL schedule. I got a couple other NFL items I want to get to him with on the other side as we continue on Sports Wrap. Sammy Arnell rejoins us in 10 minutes. Get his thoughts on the NFL schedule release. How about the Bears? Their number in Vegas, as we bring back in Jason Cole, Hall of Fame selector, NFL writer. The Bears' number in Vegas, not that we ever get too deep into the gambling stuff with you, but their number is 8.5. Their win total is 8.5, which just seems shockingly high for me.
With a rookie quarterback and...
Just a zillion questions.
Yeah, I would go under. I think that's a pretty safe under bet. The schedule's a little bit weak, but
it is third. Again, third.
I'm the guy who just said, you know, schedules don't really matter, so I should probably take that back. Look, the quarterback's exciting. The division is loaded with interesting teams, but interesting teams that have question marks. You know, like what is really going to happen? We really truly believe in Green Bay being this young, same thing with Detroit being this young. How's Jared Goff going to be coming off of that, you know, giant contract extension? Minnesota transition at quarterback. How's that going to go? Is Jefferson going to be on the team? So I get it, but overwhelmingly, I don't believe in the Bears from a management standpoint. Forget about whether I think Caleb Williams is any good or not. I think Caleb Williams is terrific. But I think it's going to take time for Caleb Williams to adjust his game. Like, there are some bad Patrick Mahomes things from college, from when he was at Texas Tech, that need to be ironed out. And I'm not sure that the Bears coaching staff has the people to iron out what Caleb Williams doesn't do well. Caleb Williams overwhelmingly is awesome, but he likes to throw off the wrong foot. He likes to do too much hero ball, and he's got to get rid of that.
I would agree with you on that. You mentioned the Goff contract. Do you like? I mean, look, it's not a matter of whether we like it. It's the reality of the NFL. You've got to pay these guys. And it's obviously a huge chunk of what they can offer and the pieces to sort of make it all work around them. I remember having this conversation, I think it was with you, a couple of months back when somebody got a bag. And I was arguing that, the quarterback taking up so much of your salary and having two or three players eat up so much of it makes it hard to win. And I think it might have been you that sort of argued against that. But how do you sort of wrap your head around what they've done with Goff here?
Well, I mean, the salary cap is now $230 million. In that context, $50 million on a quarterback is not what you think it is anymore. It's not taking up so much space. And the other side, and this is what most fans don't understand, is the bottom 30 guys or bottom 35 guys on your roster only take up a combined $50 to $60 million. So when you take those guys out, and then even if you add in a quarterback, you're still left with over $100 million in cap space for essentially 18, 19 guys. So it's not as difficult. Most teams are well under the cap. So the quarterback argument is not as legitimate as it was. The quarterback argument is legitimate from this perspective. Is that guy worth it in the eyes of the other guys in the locker room? Right? Like, is he a great player? Because if he's not a great player, if he's suspect, other dudes in the locker room go, why is he getting paid and I'm not? Right? Like, that's the problem. It's a mentality thing more than it is a math problem. And so that's why I worry when you pay guys who are, average to above average quarterbacks. And that's a danger in paying a guy like a Kirk Cousins or a Jared Goff who, have some skills and do some things that you really like, but also have some things that are very suspect in their game.
I want to ask you something in the remaining couple minutes I have with you. I was asked to write a column for NBC, Think NBC, and I wrote a column for them that'll be appearing in the next, sometime today, about the comments from Harrison Butker at Benedictine College. Combine that with what we saw from Aaron Rodgers, and just the hypocrisy of it all when you consider the way Colin Kaepernick was treated just 7 years ago, by the way. It feels like it's a lot longer ago than that, but it was only 7 years ago that dipping into these sort of waters and these cultural issues basically cost a guy his career. Yet we have Aaron Rodgers on with Tucker Carlson talking about waxing poetic about the history of Russia and how smart Vladimir Putin is and knows the history and he wishes Joe Biden did and everything he's going on about. Then you got Harrison Butker basically telling women, get in the kitchen, pop out some babies and show subservience to me. It's just remarkable.
And don't forget Harrison threw in there that Jews killed Christ. he's got a little bit of that going on and some other things. There's a subtle difference here between protesting on the field and taking a knee and doing something that's, against the country. And on top of that, you're black and you're militant versus a guy like Harrison Butker espousing some values that a lot of people actually closetedly agree with and wish they could make happen for themselves. Even if you're saying things like women going into the workplace is a diabolical scheme. Like, Jesus. I thought there was a fight for freedom. he's so out of touch with how the world actually works. I just want to know, like, what happened in the Butker household? Like, what, you know, like, what Stepford Wives kind of thing was going on here that, like, a woman working was somehow diabolical? And by the way, you're saying that to women who just paid $35,000 a year to go to college for 4 years, who want to go into the workplace, and you're telling them that their goals in life are part of a diabolical scheme. Like, it was so out there and so wild. But as much as I hate the message, he's expressing it on his own, and he's not doing it on the field, and he's not doing it at the workplace. And I protect, you know, part of protecting free speech is protecting free speech that is stupid, right? Like, that's unfortunately, that's part of the game.
Doing it outside and doing it, you know, in the middle of the off season. Certainly probably right. helps him as well. Yeah. I get it. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Jason Cole, always appreciate it, my friend.
Anytime. Be good.
We're coming back.
Attention families with a loved one in a nursing home. If your loved one has suffered from bed sores, falls, broken bones, dehydration, or even death, you may be entitled to a substantial settlement. If you have a loved one who was injured in a nursing home, we will find out what happened. State violations are found against nursing homes every day. You have a limited time to file your claim, so don't wait. Call 800-398-5999 and speak with one of our attorneys. The call is confidential and free.
The one and only Sports Wrap continues on this Thursday. Thanks to Jason Cole for hanging out, giving us some thoughts. I didn't see as much of the schedule release on Wednesday night as I typically would. Had some prior plans. Went to a Brazilian steakhouse. Consumed more meat than any human should ever consume in one meal. I will likely be doing a fasting day of some kind today to try and detox. I'm a meatitarian. What could I say? It's a commitment. So I wasn't as plugged in as I would normally be. I don't know what Sam's excuse is, but apparently he wasn't as plugged in as he would normally be too. I don't know what your excuse would be.
NBA games? One NHL game? I mean, brother, we had afternoon baseball yesterday? Come on. I'm sorry, NFL, but you can't have every day of the year.
Oh, they think they can.
Clearly.
They think they can. But I've gone through, just to go through some of the highlights here, winners, losers, all of that good stuff. Listen, Chicago, third weakest schedule, according to last year's records. I was shocked to learn that the Bears right now, their win total is set at 8.5. Juice to the under. Juice to the over, if I have it correctly. Yeah, juice to the over at -150. I got to admit, that number feels high to me. Vegas doesn't, you know, Vegas is one of the things that, one of the things I love about Vegas and odds makers and all that stuff is they take emotion out of it where you and I could get wrapped up, become prisoner to the moment as much as we try not to. It's something that happens to us all the time in sports talk. Vegas, they're dead inside. Generally, they're dead inside. But this number, to me, feels like they are sort of wrapped in this idea of all this optimism around the Bears and, you know, Caleb Williams and all of this. And then you look at the schedule. The fact of the matter is this team has needed to win for a long time and hasn't been able to. Why is it going to be any different now?
I'm kind of spoke my mind there, Jason. It's like we had already had this discussion or something. I mean, that number to me just seems too high, and I don't know why they're juicing the over. What I've been thinking about in my head a little bit from a Vegas perspective with this number specifically, but we should think about this when we're talking about these longer term bets. It does happen slightly with shorter term bets, is a lot of times these lines, when they're so far out from the event or when they're just first put up on the board, the numbers are hung in a way where the book will want the first bet or the first group of bets to come in a certain direction so that they're forced to move the number the other way. This seems to me like the books were originally hanging this number where they wanted the first bet to come in on the over at 8.5. They wanted people to come in and bet the Bears were going to be a 9-win team at -150. So eventually you'll probably see that number go up to 9.5 and the juice fall to the under, which is when I will plan on attacking that, because I think at best that team is really 9 wins. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure at some point down the road this summer, we've got a lot of time between now and football season, we'll go through each of the team's schedules and break down their win totals one by one right here on Sports Wrap. But at the end of the day, you got to remember that these numbers are hung with intention, right? There is a reason that 8.5 is out there with that heavy juice to the over. Those books pretty clearly to me want that first bet to come in on the Bears to be a 9-win team.
I wonder how people feel about the Chiefs. You know, because there's always this argument, the best story, if the NFL's writing the script is the Chiefs go and run it through the season and win a third straight Super Bowl, do something that's never been done before. I wonder how people view their schedule in light of that, this idea that this team is trying to do something that is unprecedented. You know, just real quick here, running through what the Chiefs have. They open, obviously, at home against the Ravens. Then they're home against the Bengals, followed by week 3 at the Falcons. I mean, boy, I'll tell you, you could just have a field day just talking about the first 3 weeks for the Chiefs between the Ravens, Bengals, and Burrow coming back, Kirk Cousins and the Falcons and everything kind of hovering around that team with the drafting of Penix. Who knows? I mean, if the Falcons are 0-2 through the first 2 weeks, we could be entering week 3 talking about, where's Michael Penix? I mean, there's some fun storylines just in the first few weeks involving the Chiefs. Then they're at the Chargers. Home for the Saints, at the Niners. You look at some of their tougher matchups, and the first couple weeks they have good teams at home, but they're in Buffalo next this season. Some interesting high profile matchups involving the Chiefs.
I think that the Chiefs, they'll walk. Like quick glance, there are like maybe 5 good games in this schedule. Barring some sort of Mahomes injury, this team will walk to another AFC West championship. They'll probably walk to another AFC title game, and they'll probably walk to another Super Bowl where they'll probably win again. I can't believe actually how favorable the Chiefs' schedule worked out this year for a team that was first in their division last year and won the Super Bowl. Doesn't seem to quite add up, but hey, never put anything past Roger Goodell, am I right?
I'll tell you this. I love the Bills' final 3 games. Home for the Patriots, home for the Jets, at the Patriots. I don't know where Buffalo will be by that point of the season because I haven't looked at the rest of the schedule, but my God, they got some advantages late. Real quick.
The 5 weeks before that, Kansas City by San Francisco, at LA, at Detroit. They're done.
We're coming back.
What's up, guys? What I'm about to show you is going to change the way you shave your head forever.
You can shave your head in 90 seconds or less.
With no cuts or nicks. It's 100% waterproof.
It even works in the shower.
Introducing Remington's Balder Boss. With increased flex and 5 dual-track floating head design, get over 60% more head coverage for a faster, closer shave and skin-close results.
No nicks, no scrapes. fit in the palm of my hand, and the results were amazing.
Shave in the shower or with any foam or gel with Japanese-grade steel blades. Plow through the thickest of hair anytime, anywhere. There's even a pop-up trimmer to complete your perfect groove. Now you can try the Remington Balder Boss in your home for 30 days for just $14.99. Complete with a 5-year limited warranty and 100% satisfaction guarantee. You can also get our ear, nose, and brow trimmer free. Just pay separate processing and handling.
Give it a try. You won't be disappointed.
Order your Balder Boss now.
All right, odds and ends coming up in 10 minutes. First, something to consider. Sam Yarnell. Consider this. On ESPN2, on Tuesday night, with the NBA postseason on, Knicks Pacers postseason on, by the way. Not just any postseason game, Knicks Pacers on. You had Caitlin Clark's debut against the Connecticut Sun in the WNBA. 2.1 rating. I mean, that is... I mean, look, and who knows? I mean, these things are always fluctuating. You know, maybe people tuned in, watched it, and said, all right, I got my fill. Call me in the postseason. We'll see how this sort of trends throughout the season. But that is a monster number for this league, which I think it was the largest since 01, the largest WNBA rating, or 06. I can't remember if it's 01 or 06. Either way, it was eons ago, in relative terms. What did you make when you saw that number? Was it higher than you thought, lower than you thought? It was certainly higher than I thought it would be.
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely higher than I thought. It's a good thing, but the concern that you mentioned is definitely there, right? Was it people saying, all right, I saw this. Caitlin Clark obviously didn't perform insanely well. Are they gone until the postseason? Gosh, I hope not. But great for the league, no matter what. Like, every time we talk about Caitlin Clark, she's just continuing to bring popularity and recognition to the sport and to new leagues now. So it's great for the WNBA. I'm very excited. I hope the Fever make the playoffs only for the sake of I need to see Caitlin Clark perform in a WNBA playoff game. Like, that would be awesome. The environment would probably be amazing. Yeah, it's good for the league. I got to see week two, though.
I will grant you that it would be great to see them in the postseason. But my concern is they may not make the postseason.
And 23-1 to win the chip.
Yeah. I mean, look, they're +7.5 at home tonight against the Liberty. That's speaking volumes about what Vegas thinks about this team, at least early on. And it's not like, and here's the thing about the WNBA versus the NBA. The season's half as long. You can't get buried under a bad record early on and think, well, we got 82 games. There's going to be ebbs and flows. There aren't a lot of ebbs and flows to be found in a 42 or 41 or whatever the hell schedule it is versus what the NBA schedule and the rigors and the length of that season. Plus, you've got the Olympics and all this stuff. I mean.
So just, but one quick, the Liberty, the Connecticut Sun are a very good team. I believe they went pretty deep in the playoffs last year. But the Liberty are the best, or if not second best team in the WNBA. It's like them and the Aces are the two best teams in the league and are on this, finals collision course seemingly every year. I think last year this number in this game is probably 11-12. So to see it 7 is a great improvement for the Fever. I haven't looked at the odds, quite honestly, but maybe I'll sprinkle a little something on the Fever to make the playoffs.
Tonight, some fun props. And I know that for some people who watch this show, depending on when you get it, this will be after the game has ended. So we acknowledge that. Caitlin Clark to score more points than Sabrina Ionescu. It was just at minus 150. It just went off the board. Everything just went off the board from Liberty Fever for some reason on FanDuel. But I think it was minus 150. And obviously void if tied.
I would bet the no. I would bet Sabrina. Because Sabrina's got more experience in the W. Sabrina's a dog. Like, Sabrina's a baller. She's WNBA finals last year. Like, Sabrina's got it like that. I would bet Sabrina in that case.
See, all the literally just as I was about to start talking about this with you,
they knew the numbers. The books knew you were coming. They saw you coming from a mile away.
Let me add this in though. Atlanta again. We're talking about Caitlin Clark being her sort of own economy here. I've discussed this. The Atlanta Dream, anticipating a much larger crowd for their two regular season home games against Caitlin Clark, are moving to the NBA, the NBA's arena for the Atlanta Hawks. They usually play in the 3,500-seat Gateway Center Arena near the city's airport. It's the smallest arena in the WNBA, by the way. The Hawks play at State Farm, which can hold more than 17,000. We'll see what the crowds look like June 21st and August 26th for those games.
I think that they're not the first WNBA team to do this. If I'm not mistaken, Vegas, I think the Las Vegas, the Las Vegas Aces are also, they're playing in the T-Mobile Arena where the Golden Knights play for their two Caitlin Clark games instead of the UNLV Arena or something along those lines, something somewhere else that they play on the Strip. I mean, she really is her own economy, Jason. We've talked about it for what, the better part of a year now. This woman is special, and she brings a lot to the WNBA. Like, she had a 20-point performance off night in her first game off as night, a rookie, and people were comparing her to Sue Bird. And I can't say enough about Caitlin Clark. She really is. She's driving this entire sport right now.
You're going to get a ton, and you're going to get a ton of her on TV. That's for sure. So, the expectations obviously will remain high. By the way, she's minus 700 right now to win Rookie of the Year. Cameron Brink at plus 900 is the next closest thing out there. Just wanted to put that out there. All right, odds and ends. Yes, sprinkle, sprinkle. Odds and ends right around the corner on this Thursday edition of the show. All righty. Before we wrap things up, this reminder, check out the podcast, vodcast version of Sports Wrap. Everybody's doing it. Go and subscribe now. Available on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn. For some reason on TuneIn, it has the old cash-in logo. I'm not sure how we changed that. I don't know. I just push a button, upload. That's it. Time for some odds. And ends? Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. See, you kids, you know how to do this stuff. Fix the logo. That's it.
Yep.
Sure. All right. Odds and ends. Could it be the end of this iteration of the Cleveland Cavaliers? It's a fair question to ask when you consider that the team's got some decisions to make as it relates to Donovan Mitchell, who missed games 4 and 5 of this series, which undoubtedly changed the complexion of this series. Remember, this was, you know, a 2-1 lead. It was 1-1 after the first two games. I mean, they were in this series, despite the fact that Boston was heavily favored. It sounds like they like Bickerstaff. But nobody, here's the thing, when I see all these things about how the organization loves Bickerstaff and Bickerstaff saying, I'll be here as long as they want me, it tells me they like him, but if there's a better option out there, they'd be willing to take it. That's kind of what it feels like to me.
Yeah, it's a very interesting situation around the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Drinking game. Interesting. Drinking game.
They've done a very cautious job, if you've noticed, with the whole Donovan Mitchell thing, right? Everyone's so quick to assume Donovan Mitchell's gone. Donovan Mitchell himself has done a very good job of not ever saying, I'm fed up here or whatever. I don't like my situation here. And he's also never said, I love it in Cleveland and I can't wait to extend. It seems like Donovan Mitchell's done a very, 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 very deliberate job in terms of doing exactly that and not letting anyone know what his intentions fully are. For the Cavaliers, you kind of have to bring back JB Bickerstaff. I think that the Shams tweet said, which was obviously sent right from someone in the Cavaliers front office, it said something along the lines of this coaching pool being incredibly thin, so on and so forth. I don't buy that. I think that the Bickerstaff thing depends more on the Mitchell thing. And I think if the front office goes to Donovan Mitchell and says, hey, you kind of get the keys to the castle. Do you want to bring back JB Bickerstaff or do you want us to go elsewhere? I think that'll kind of dictate it. If Mitchell walks, I think Bickerstaff is back no matter what, which is why I think they worded their releases through the media the way that they did.
We mentioned Donovan Mitchell, and that wasn't unintentional because one of the storylines of this NBA postseason hasn't just been the, you know, the run of the Knicks or you know, what Boston's doing, this rally by Denver, Luka and the Mavericks. It's been about the guys that are not on the court. And look, I don't know if there's a remedy to this. This is just me pointing it out. But you have basically the entire Knicks roster is out. Kristaps Porzingis out. Donovan Mitchell, Kawhi Leonard, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Damian Lillard. The postseason is supposed to be where these guys get their best chance to shine. And so many of them, basically, the light's been, you know, the candle's been blown out by the fact that we've had all these injuries. I don't know that there's an answer to it. I just thought it was worth mentioning.
I definitely think it is, Jason. Like, when we talk in the era of basketball in which we're in about load management and how much players want to use that during the season, yeah. Shout out to Kawhi Leonard for pretty much inventing that single-handedly and still missing the playoffs in load management era. It just starts to not make sense to me. If we're going to set all these rules where guys have to play 65 games and players are essentially just allowed to not do their job whenever they feel like it, I don't understand why these guys are missing so much time in the playoffs. There's got to be something fundamentally wrong there that the NBA is going to have to address in some way or another. No,
we'll see. I don't know how you do. Were you going to take a week off before the playoffs start? Try and get guys right. Try and get guys healthy. I don't know. I'm not sure how you do it. Colorado beats Dallas last night. They're up 3-2 in that series. It's been a very entertaining series from what I've been able to watch of it. So that's obviously something. Also, Sam Yarnell, you've got the Rangers trying to wrap it up against the Hurricanes tonight after dropping the last two games, showing themselves as fallible in this postseason, and Edmonton and Vancouver 2-2 going into tonight.
Yeah, I really thought the Stars were going to finish out that series last night. Good to see the Avalanche get a win back and force a game six in this series. With the Rangers,
it's a wrap tonight.
I'm not losing hope on this team. I'm not selling myself on this whole Carolina Hurricanes concept, even though they have become the Buffalo Sabres of the South. Actually, not as much as the Florida Panthers have. So I'll be a Florida Panthers supporter. That'll be fine. Canucks and Oilers, the two teams out west that no one stays up late enough to watch. Although it has been a really good series. I have caught glimpses of it here and there. That Canucks team, they're really rallying this year. But if this Oilers team doesn't win it, if they don't go at least to the conference finals, McDavid's not going to be happy, and they're going to have to start rethinking that core of Dreisaitl, McDavid, Nugent Hopkins, and they're also starting their third string goalie at this point. Problematic.
It's going to wrap it up for us. Thank you, Sam. Thank you to Jason Cole. See you back here on Friday, a NASCAR Friday. Tino Pitino will be here. See you then.